O friend, in this world of love, one has to suffer loss. The beloved one is obtained later on, but first one has to get his head cut. He who has earned the love has not hidden himself. He who sacrifices his mind gets the manifested Lord. If the courtyard of the heart is pure, the beloved one comes and sits there. The path of this love is not smooth. It is sharper than the edge of a sword. To climb the cross is easier. It is very difficult to earn the true love. That Lord becomes pleased only if one dies while living. Love cannot be found in the marketplace, nor in the mountains and hills, not in the waves of the ocean, nor in the cities, nor in the wilderness. The temple of that Lord is within us. He who loves gets him. He who wants to love truly from within should bring his head on the palm of his hand. He who puts his head at the feet of the Master is not afraid of death. O Kripal Guruji, forgive us. Ajayb is undergoing sufferings. O friend, in this world of love, one has to suffer loss. The beloved one is obtained later on, but first one has to get his head cut. This is Sanchi's Bhajan, Isa Prima di Dunya Vicha Sajana, page 82.
Isa Prima di Dunya Vicha Sajana Nukasana Tona Penda He Pichom Pritam Piara Tamilita Pela Siddhikata Vana Pendahe Isa Prema Di Dunia Vicha Sajana Nukasana Tana Pendahe Picham pritam piara tamilita pela siddhikata vana pendahe jisinevi prema kamaya Kaya Javi Mana Beta Chahanda Ahachara Rabanu Ponda Jisenevi Prema Kamaya Napana Javi mana beta chahandai ahachara rabanu pondai verahe chekara sapatilita vicha pritamake bendai Isa prema di dunia vicha sajana nukasana utana pendahe picham pritam piara tamilita pela sirakata vana pendahe e prema darasita bikarahe kande di darito tikarahe Sache prema kamona o kai. E prema darasita bikarai. Kande di darito tikarai. Sulite charina so kai. Sache prema kamona o kai. O malikata hi kushove jihonde hi marina pindahe. Isa prema di tunia vicha sajina nukasana hutona pindahe. Picham pritam piara tamilita pela sira katavana pindahe. Namilita prema bajara vicha na paribatena pahara vicha na sagara dialehira dara vicha na shera tena ujara vicha na milida prema bajara vicha na paripatana pahara vicha na sagarati alehera dara vicha na shehera tena ujara vicha o se prabhu damandara andare jo prema kare so lenda he isa prema di tunia vicha sajana nuka sana utona da he picham pritam piara tamilita pela sira katavana pindahe. Sache prema jo andero karina chahe asisa talite dareke ae. Josira charinate daridae amareno mulina daridae. Sache prema jo andero karina chahe o sisa talite darike ae. Josira charinate daridae amareno mulina daridae. Kiripala guruji bakashalavo ajaba dukare sendai. Isa prema di dunia vicha sajana nuka sala utona Pichung Pitam Piara Pela Sira Katavana Pendahe.
He who wants to love truly from within should bring his head on the palm of his hand. He who puts his head at the feet of the Master is not afraid of death. O Kripal Guruji, forgive us. Ajaib is undergoing sufferings. O friend, in this world of love, one has to suffer loss. The beloved one is obtained later on, but first, one has to get his head cut. One month from now, we'll have a meditation retreat, one-day meditation retreat, celebrating the founding of Sant Bani Ashram and the first visit of Master Kripal Singh, October 11th, 1963. The retreat will be all day Saturday, October 14th. Initiates are welcome to attend any of the meditation sittings, and there are schedules of satsang and meditation times at the book table. And the local initiates who want to take meals at the ashram, please let us know so we have some idea of how many dear ones to cook for, and guests wanting to attend and needing overnight accommodations, please let the ashram know well ahead of time. And also a sweet reminder that next Saturday, the 23rd of September, we'll be holding a memorial service, a celebration of the life of our dear sister Yvonne Starr, Tony Longo's beloved companion in life. So that'll be at 2 p.m. on next Saturday. Okay, we will continue in the book In Search of the Gracious One. We're in the section where Sanji's talking about his army experiences and the valuable lessons that he learned from that. So Sanji says, when I was 18, some people came to entertain the soldiers at Lahore. That was the first chance that I had had to see dancing, and I was curious to see what it was like. Among those people was a man who was wearing the clothes of a woman, and he was dancing in front of all the men and making the people happy. In those days, it was very difficult for a woman to come and dance among the men. After the dance was over, everybody gave that person 1 rupee. I also thought, she is very brave, and I should also give her something, because the other people were giving. But when I asked one man, how is it that she is so brave that she is dancing here among the men? And the people laughed at me and said, oh no, she's not a woman. It's a man. He's just wearing the clothes of a woman. He's dancing here to collect money. It's not a girl. I was very surprised, and I was very pleased, because I had learned a very great lesson from him. I thought, this man has changed his clothes and has become a woman only for the sake of money. In this world, what will people not do for the sake of money? This man, in order to get 1 rupee, sacrificed his own being. He became ready to change his sex. I compared that with our search for God. And what is the value of God? God is such that there's no other thing in this world as valuable as he is, and in order to realize him, we need to sacrifice a lot. We should be willing to change ourselves and sacrifice everything to realize God. I was so pleased with that man because I learned a lesson from him that I gave him 10 rupees instead of 1. I thanked him because he had taught me that lesson. Once I came home on 2 days' leave with 4 friends who also lived in the same area. We all had to go back on the same train that came to the station of our village at exactly 12 noon. However, we didn't leave our homes until 1:30, and by the time that we got to the station. The train had already left. As a result, we got back late to our unit. When we got there late, we were told that we would be questioned because we had not come back on time. The next day, we were summoned by the officer, and he asked all of us, "Why were you late? Why didn't you inform us? Why didn't you send a cable?" This was the first time that we had made a mistake, and usually for the first mistake, the soldiers are forgiven and just given a warning, so we were not very worried. Still, when the officer started questioning us, we became very confused and didn't know what to do. He started asking us, each one of us, why we did not come on time. All the other four friends said that the train was delayed, but when that officer came to me, I felt that I should tell him the truth. I told him, "Dear sir, the train did come on time, but we left our home late. That is why we missed the train. Now, it is up to you. Whatever punishment you want to give us, you can give us." Because I had told him the truth and I had surrendered to him, he became very pleased and he forgave us. At that time, I learned this lesson, that if we had left our home at 11 o'clock, an hour earlier than the train, we would have got to our duty on time and nobody would have questioned us. Nobody would be scared of any punishment, and there would be no reason for us to be confused and perturbed. And there would be no reason for anyone to speak a lie. It was only because we wanted to rest one more hour in our homes that we had to go through all this difficulty. And then I thought, as we were afraid of that officer, and we were confused, and the other people were not even able to speak the truth, are we ever afraid of our master like this? Do we ever take our meditation so seriously? What about those people who don't do their meditation or remember the Simran? When the master summons them and asks them questions, what will they say? Will they be strong enough to tell him the truth? We don't care for the master as much as we care for a worldly officer. Another thing I learned in the military was the benefit of keeping a schedule. All the things of government happen on an exact schedule. The trains move on time, the flights operate on time. If they do not maintain those schedules, and they are not timely, that causes problems for many people. Many times, people take this lightly, and we do not take the time seriously. I came to understand that God has given us this measure, time. God has made a schedule for the seasons to happen, and he has made a schedule for the suns and moons and stars. You see how the sun always rises at the exact time, and the moon also rises at the exact time. Because the schedule of God is perfect and every natural thing is happening according to a perfect schedule, God made the people of this world understand how they have to make the schedules. God has also made a perfect schedule of how much time we have to live in this world and how many breaths we have to take. And there will be no addition or subtraction to that. Whatever schedule God has made, he will stick to that, and that is why we should learn to appreciate the time. We should never miss our schedule, and we should always make the best use of our time, because God has given us a limited time in this world, and we must do our work in that limited time. So I came to understand that we should definitely make a schedule for our day-to-day life, and we should not miss any part of the schedule that we have made. If one makes a habit of doing everything on time, on a schedule, and remaining in the discipline, then one can make a schedule of one's day-to-day life in which one can go to bed on time, one can get up on time, go to work on time, and one can meditate on time. If one follows that schedule strictly, then not only in one's spiritual life, but also in one's worldly life, one can become successful, and in that way we may easily progress to God. In the beginning, I used to do the work of a signalman. Before the wireless radio systems came into existence, the Army used to send signals using sunlight by flashing with mirrors or at nighttime through the use of the light of a lamp. In both cases, the light was coming straight into the eyes. We had to fix our gaze constantly without averting our gaze for even a minute. And sometimes, the message lasted for 20 or 30 minutes. If we blinked our eyes even once, we could miss a lot of the schedule. During the day, the signals were very radiant and bright. But when I used to do the work of the signaler, my eyes were so good that I could tolerate the radiance of the sunlight and could read the signals very well. Most people's eyes would start to water when they would read those signals, and many people wore sunglasses when doing that. But I didn't need to. Similarly, at night, my eyes would not water, and I would receive those signals very clearly. Later, I was trained to become a wireless operator, and I was sent to school to take the course on that. There was a lot of reading and writing involved in that, but every night I would go to bed only after finishing the work that I was given to do. I never would think that I would do the work later. Whatever work was given to me by my teachers, I would finish that, and only then would I go to bed. So, studying hard in this way, I passed many difficult tests on this subject in the Army, even the test which they gave in the place called Pune, which was the most difficult test at that time. The instructors we had there were very strict. They would say, either you come to the school after studying your lesson, or you should be prepared to leave this place. If you do not do well, then we will mark an F on your examination, and we'll send you back from here. And they would also say, we don't believe in those gods and goddesses to whom you have prayed before coming here. We only believe in the hard work which you have done in preparing yourself for the examination. Even though that examination was very tough, I was never afraid or worried whether I would pass the examination or not. I would just do my job. Since I was confident and I had worked hard, I knew that whatever question I had answered was correct and that I would definitely pass the examination. After writing my answers in the examinations, I would write next to the questions R, which means right. When I took that examination, my teacher was also there. He was just taking a walk around the exam room, and when he saw that I was doing my paper well and that all my answers were right, he was happy. When it was announced by the English officer that I had secured the full score and that they were going to give me a salary of 2 levels higher as a bonus, my teacher became very happy, and he lifted me up and expressed his happiness. The English officer said, even though this person was so confident about his answers that he wrote R, which he did not have the right to do, still, I'm very happy that he has secured the full score. If a wrestler goes into the ring thinking that he's going to be defeated, he will definitely be defeated. If a wrestler goes there with confidence that he will defeat the other person, only then can he defeat him. This attitude of confidence is also important for the disciple. The disciple should never lose his confidence. He should always have faith and love in the Master and confidence in his own self that he will definitely pass the test and become successful in his struggle. Later on, I had to work as a radio operator in the war. I found that in the war, the enemy also has radio operators whose job it is to create disturbances in the radio messages between the people of the other country. If two people on one side were communicating, there would be an enemy soldier with a set whose work would be to cause a disturbance so that the first two cannot communicate well. But radio operators knew that this disturbance is from the enemy, so they change the frequency of their set, and they pay no attention to the disturbance. In this way, they can go on communicating with each other. Sometimes in the war, the radio operators of the enemy will also speak friendly words and will try to talk with the people of the other side. And they will ask, "What is happening? What do you need?" In that way, they will try to find out the situation on the other side. If the operator on this side is not wise and doesn't recognize the voice as that of an enemy, then his side will suffer defeat because he will tell where they are marching and things like that. When the enemy side learns those things, then they can attack. I found that the efforts of the enemy radio operators were very much like the efforts of the mind. The mind's work is always to cause a disturbance. He doesn't have to take any message, and he doesn't have to give any message. His work is just to cause a disturbance when we are communicating with God. When the mind is causing disturbance, he will also often come as a friend, using very sweet words, and he will tell us, "Do this or do that," or "Get up from the meditation." We feel that he is our friend, and we do not even think that what he is telling us to do will lead to a negative thing. But the wise meditator pays no attention to the disturbance that the mind is causing, but always keeps himself in the simran. The wise meditator, like the wise radio operator, knows how to differentiate between friends and enemies. He is able to recognize whether the thought is coming from the master or from the mind. We will leave off there. And this reading is a selection of three letters that Baba Sawan Singh wrote to the Brahmins. And the first one is dated February 5th, 1914. And Sawan Singh says, "Dear son and daughter, I am greatly pleased that your cousin's son is interested in our teachings. Please let him investigate thoroughly and help him in every possible way, and also inform him of the non-use of animal food and liquors by the followers of truth. You may freely discuss to clear your mental conceptions, as it will not deter your onward journey. You must not be anxious for your slow progress, as it comes that way. Have patience always, and continue to work on determinedly. Obedience to the Holy Father's commands is the omen for the acquisition of success. The Father is everywhere and cares for his children. You may allow all or any true seekers after truth to read these books, as it will help them. Yours affectionately, Sawan Singh. P.S. You should keep it in mind that you should not be anxious to scatter these teachings far and wide. If anyone comes to you with love and is a real and honest seeker of truth, you may allow him to read the books and make him understand all about this faith. And this letter is dated March 23rd, 1914. Dear son and daughter, received both of your letters and pleased to note that you are following the teachings with keen interest. As for your instructions to your sick friend to pray to the merciful, the Radha Swami, for help, even this would not be favorable on your personal behalf, as your willpower is brought into action in such cases. From the viewpoint of a satsangi, you should always bear in mind to determinedly stand off from even the serious cases to witness God's doings. I do not mean that you should not attend to your sick relatives or friends. No, on the contrary, you should pay your best attention to administer unto them with the fullness of your art. But your inner self should be prepared to agree with the Father's will. There is no harm in naming the religion as Radha Swami faith. You should never miss your spiritual exercises, as the more you will faithfully do it, the better results you will find. You need not wait for my permission to allow the books to the true seekers after truth. You may use your own discretion in this matter. Your experience on the journey at the time of the practice is very beautiful. It happens to the devotee now and then, and you should not be surprised at its vision. You should pay more attention to the repetition of the holy names and hear the sound so that you may cross this plane soon. You should remember that such things happen in dreams also. You should always try to catch the holy sound to lead you upward. In regard to leaving your present location and profession, you should first note that you have to work for your living everywhere you go, as you cannot live without food and the other necessities of life. If you want to change your profession, you may consider carefully all about your surrounding conditions and arrange it accordingly. But you should not leave your home and go out of business for the sake of spiritual progress. You can accomplish it by following the instructions at home. The Holy Father is within. Never think to go into the wilderness to find him. You may attend to your business regularly, repeating the holy names while at work, and both morning and evening, give as much time to the exercises as possible. In this way, you will reach the goal one day. Do not hurry, and never get disappointed. Trust in the mercy of the Supreme Father. He will certainly take care of you. With best regards for your success, yours affectionately, Sawan Singh. P.S. You know the Holy Father, Radha Swami, is within all, and everyone can ask him for help. But the point is that your internal powers may not be used for others. And this letter is dated June 3rd, 1926. Dear daughter and dear son, your letter of March 7th reached here when I was out. The delay in the reply was unavoidable. This will not reach you in time, for you will have left for the south. I am sending you a copy of this to California, and it is possible that you may get it there in time. I am sending it through Mrs. Phillips. There's no time to make any commentary on your note on creation now. I am answering here some of the other questions raised in your letter. I am glad to learn that you, Doctor, in spite of hard work, are keeping fit. And Mrs. Brock has considerably improved in her health, and you both are ready to make a short break in your work and go south, as well as in the Master's work. I am sure your meeting with the members there will greatly benefit them. Meet them all with such love and affection that even a dry, withered heart will take courage and flourish. My message to all is, brave is he who has control over his mind and senses, for the inward progress is in proportion to this control. It is the repetition, the simran, that brings the mind in and the sound current that pulls it up. Inside us, there are inexhaustible treasures. The Lord himself is within us. Only he who has gone within can appreciate this. The others have no idea of it. America is rich. The standard of living is high. To earn a decent livelihood, greater effort and more time have to be put in. Consequently, there is comparatively less time left free, which one can utilize in the training and controlling of the mind. This cannot be helped. The Americans have to make good under these circumstances. But where there is a will, there is a way. Mind is a curious thing. It will gladly do all kinds of work externally without feeling tired. But the moment that you put it to the exercises, you ask it to sit still inside, it'll try to escape by putting in all sorts of excuses, like the need for rest after a hard day's work, the need of rest over a heavy stomach, or bad weather, and so forth. But if there were longing behind it, or if there were determination behind it, then the inward progress would proceed uninterrupted. Those who complain of sleep at the time of doing exercises usually sit half-heartedly and only as a matter of routine, not with any longing. When you meet Mr. Heron next, you may tell him that during his work hours, he should keep his attention directed towards the eye focus. Work needs attention only momentarily. Most of the time, the mind is off the work. This utilization of the attention will not interfere with his work. On the other hand, the work will proceed better. Riches or poverty depend on the absence or presence of desires, respectively. He who has no desires is the richest. And the so-called richest is the poorest if his desires are not fulfilled. He who does not need anything is a sovereign. I am glad to learn that Mrs. Brock has finished her story and the whole thing is ready for publication. Dear daughter, you will understand now why I dissuaded you then from writing stories. Some time ago, one of the letters that we read, he was answering Mrs. Brock's concerns about getting involved in writing a book. And at the time, he cautioned her to be careful about how it affected her attention. So, dear daughter, you will understand now why I dissuaded you then from writing stories. Now you know what concentration is. You have some control over your mind, and you can follow its movements. I will lay down as a general proposition that you may do anything you like, provided it does not interfere with your concentration. I give you now full permission to write stories or to do oil painting or any other vocation that you like, provided that it does not scatter your mind. If you had continued writing for publication then, it would have materially interfered with your concentration. Literary pursuit usually scatters the mind. You may do whatever you like, but keep a watch over your mind. Anything that does not scatter it is good. As to why your health has been indifferent, it is all due to karma, but not necessarily of this life or the past one. No attempt should therefore be made to connect it with this or that, commission or omission. You are perfectly right when you say that, quote, the thing for us to do is to get to the light ourselves as fast as possible, unquote. Whatever effort a devotee makes to reach the goal is his service to his master. At initiation, the master took upon himself the responsibility of seeing the devotee established in such khand, the region of pure bliss. If the devotee does his best, he lightens the task of the master. Even if the devotee leaves the guru for one reason or another, the guru does not leave him. He will bring him round sooner or later, this life or the next. I am glad to learn that Mrs. Howard is on the path with faith and finds answers to her questions in my letters to you. She's free to write to me whenever she likes. Doctor says that the tireless patience with which the questions are answered fills one with wonder and gratitude. In this, my dear son, I am not doing any obligation to anyone. It is my duty, pure and simple. With Father's blessings on all of you, yours affectionately, Sawan Singh. And we'll begin reading a satsang that Sanchi gave here at Sant Bani, August 3rd, 1977. And this is on a hymn of Bhule Shah. We'll begin with lines from the hymn. I am waiting for you. Come, visit me. I have told you. Send me some message. And Sanchi says, Majanu and Layla were in love with each other. Layla was a princess, and her father, who was the king of that place, announced in the town that if anyone came calling himself Majanu, they should give him whatever he wanted without asking for payment. The king would be responsible for it. So when this was announced, many people came to ask for things, calling themselves Majanu. Millions of Majanus were born in that town. But in fact, there was only one real Majanu who was in love with Layla, and he never came to ask for anything in the name of his beloved. So when millions of Majanus were born in that town, all the merchants of the town were surprised, and they came to the king to find out whether there was one Majanu or many. The king told them, All right, tomorrow I will tell you exactly how many Majanus there are. He asked Layla, How many Majanus are there? She said, There's only one Majanu. Tomorrow I will do something so that only the real one will come, and the so-called Majanus will go away. So Layla put one knife and one small bowl at all the shops in town, saying, Layla wants one piece of flesh from the heart of Majanu. When the people, calling themselves Majanu, were told that Layla wants a piece of flesh from your heart, and she sent this knife and bowl, they all ran away, and nobody came to take anything. When the real Majanu came to know that in his name many so-called Majanus were born, and they were cheating the shopkeepers and taking things because of what the king had announced, he was very surprised. He was the only Majanu who came in the evening and was ready to give his flesh. And he said, If Majanu had known this earlier, what is the question of only a piece of flesh from his heart? He would have given all his body. Similarly, in the court of our master, we are all becoming the so-called Majnus, drinking milk and other things, but the real Majnu, who gives pain to the body, is only one. Once, Guru Gobind Singh Ji was giving satsang before 5,000 people. From that gathering, he wanted to test how many real disciples were there. So he came out, and he set up a tent on one side, and nobody knew what was going to happen. He stood there with a naked sword and said, "I need one man. I want to kill him." Well, nobody stood up. Everybody was thinking, the previous masters took care of their disciples, but this master has changed. Has he gone mad? But nobody knew his real will. When Guru Gobind Singh said this, that he needed one head, only one stood up and said, "Yes, my head is ready." He was taken into the tent, and he saw that 5 goats were kept there. Guru Gobind Singh killed one of the goats, and with the blood-stained sword, he came out and he said, "I need one more head." When the people saw the blood on the sword, they were fully convinced that he was killing his disciples, and nobody stood up. But one man who had completely surrendered to Guru Gobind Singh stood up and said, "My head is ready." He was also taken into the tent, and another goat was killed. In this way, the master found 5 people in that gathering of 5,000 who were ready, who had completely surrendered themselves to him. The master gave them his full attention and made them perfect disciples. When they were brought out alive, the people saw that this was a test and that they had failed, and they started defending themselves, saying, "If we had known this before, we all would have been ready to go to Guru Gobind Singh." Similarly, Guru Nanak tested his disciples to find out how many in his Sangat knew the inner secret. He showed them a dead body, and he said, "Who's ready to eat this?" Now, even to touch a dead body is understood as inauspicious. So what is the question of eating? How could we eat a dead body? But when Guru Nanak asked Bhai Lena, who later on was called Guru Angad, his spiritual successor, he accepted it and he said, "All right, I will eat it." He started looking at that dead body. Guru Nanak asked him, "Bhai Lena, what are you doing?" And he answered him, "I am wondering from which side I should start eating." And in that way he passed the test, which was put up by Guru Nanak. And after that, he became the successor of Guru Nanak Sahib. And there's a footnote here. It says, according to the story, as Bhai Lena took the first bite, the corpse changed into sweets, which had been its real form. When Guru Nanak left the body, in intense longing and pain of separation, Guru Angad said, "It is better to die before our beloved leaves, because whatever life we live after him is all illegal. It is a sin to live after our beloved dies." When Hazrat Bahu's master left the body, in the same way, he also sighed and wept, and he said, "O Bahu, I will always have this pain, and with this pain I will leave the body. Whatever life I have to live without my body, without my master, will always be spent in the pain of separation." When Master Sawan Singh left the body, Hazur Maharaj Kripal Singh had his own house in the Dera. What was the question of taking the property of the Dera? But he even left his own house in the Dera, and he went into the forest of Rishikesh to spend his life there. The disciple who has perfected his meditation will not see anything except his master. He will not look at the property of his master, because he is in the pain of separation. When Master Sawan Singh left the body, at that time, our troop was stationed at Bayas, and I saw this with my own eyes. There were approximately 200 people. Some of them jumped from the walls, some of them jumped into the river, who left the body because when they heard that their master had left, they could not bear the pain of separation. Similarly, in this hymn, Bulasha pleads with his master in the separation and love for him. When Hazur Kripal left the body, the dear ones who came from the west know what my condition was at that time. I also have the same thought. O Kripal, I am waiting for you. I'm hoping that one day you will again come to my house. You will come to me. Whenever we were sitting in his remembrance, when anyone was talking about him, I had this in my mind. I'm begging you so much. I am sending you so many messages, but you are not sending me anything. At least send me the message to tell me where you are now. We leave off at that point, and we're continuing with a tape of a talk that Master Kripal gave in Washington, D.C. in 1955, June 21, 1955, at the Friends Meeting House. And this talk was given the name, The Path of the Masters.
When that question is put to us, is there a God? What we say, what we have to say? We simply say, Bible says so, Quran says so, and other holy scriptures say this and that thing about that thing. And such saint has said so, they are correct. But it is they who have said so. What have you to say on this subject? That's the point. Have you got any personal experience with yourself? The question of experience with the ourself will come only when you know yourself, who you are, what you are. At present we are, as it were, the body itself. We cannot transcend it, we cannot analyze it at will. Unless we know ourselves, we cannot know ourselves. So, self-knowledge precedes God-knowledge. You will say, then there are so many people who are believing in God. Excuse me, they have not seen God. So long as they have not seen it, they are not theists in the true sense of the word. I am seeing you. I am theist of you people. I know you are, because I have seen you. We have heard in some people there is a God. We have learnt in holy scriptures that there is a God. No doubt, we have got that informal thing, but we have not seen it. Unless we see a thing, we are not convinced. We learn, you see, from the holy scriptures, we hear from the saints that there is a God. When we find parallel experiences of so many saints who came in the past, we can take that as an experiment maya to take up the subject, but we are not fully convinced until we see the reality with our own eyes. For instance, a sick patient is there. Doctor comes up and says, you got water in your belly. He has not seen the water in the belly, but because an expert man has come up and he says so, the most thing he can do, he will send for a board of doctors. They come up, they all diagnose the same disease. He gives them intellectually, you see. And the doctors say, well, this operation is very dangerous, you might die. Give us in writing, even if you die in operation, we are not responsible. And he gives in writing and the testimony of few of the doctors before him. This is only I mentioning, by the way, to show there is a God. The saints who came in the past, all holy scriptures, what they say, they are correct. But the question is, so long as we do not see for our own self, we cannot be fully convinced. Masters say we cannot be convinced even by the sayings of the masters unless we see that reality with our own eyes. That the teachings of the old saints in the past, they believe in an experience which we can have today, in this very life. We are not to wait till after death. So this has been the subject before us ever since the world began. There are two sides of the religion, you say. One is the outer, objective side, and the other is the subjective side. Objective side, or the apravidya as it is called in the Sanskrit, consists in all outer forms, rituals, formalism, reading of scriptures, visiting holy places, and all other rituals concerned with them. This is the preparation of the ground, elementary steps to be taken up just to create love of God, just to direct or divert our attention from outside and direct to something higher. These are helping factors, but not the be-all and end-all. Be-all and end-all before us is to know ourselves and to contact ourselves. This is a subject which has been one for all humanity, and still it is the same. You may belong to any social religion. So to have a social religion is a blessing, I would say. God made man, and man made social body. Because man is social, he will have to live in some social body. Otherwise, he will have to just create another social body to live on. So that is why when Christ was approached with that question, that the king over there wants tribute to be paid, what have you to say on this subject? He said, all right, give unto Caesar's what is Caesar's, and what is God's to God. All bodies belong to the social bodies we are born in, you remain there. But your souls are of God. Just know yourself and contact with God. This is a subject with us ever since the world began. This is the solving of the mystery of life. And until that is solved practically for us, we cannot be at peace. We will be groping for something. When that is known, nothing else remains to be known. This is what the Upanishad said. What is that? Knowing which all other things are known. Man is satisfied forever. And that is knowing oneself and knowing ourself. You would ask, well, what particular sect I am preaching? Well, I am preaching that very subject before you. We are to remain where we are in any social bodies we are born, remain there. The teachings of those social bodies are all common. They all enjoin chastity of life, non-violence, not to think evil of others, be truthful, have chaste lives. Chastity is life and sexuality is death. God is in all human beings, in all creation, love all. have hatred for none, and selfless service. These are the five pillars, I will say, which form the ethical life preached by almost all the social religions that exist today. So that is the qualification for a man to go in for the knowledge of self and knowledge of God overhead. Remain where you are, but you are soul of God's, devoted to God. So that is why the subject matter before me, I am running only as a school of spirituality. Spirituality means science of the soul. Just as medical line is the science of the body, all are equally endowed with the same two eyes, two ears, mouth, all limbs, outer form of the man is the same, and inner construction is also the same. And the disease from which we are suffering, that each man's soul is in the control of the mind, and mind is in control of the outgoing faculties, so much so that we have forgotten ourselves, who we are, what we are. This is the disease each one of us having. We have to analyze ourselves, know ourselves, and then know ourselves. This is we have to solve. So I have taken up only the subjective side of the things and putting before you. To be born in a temple is a blessing, I would say, but to remain there attached in a bigoted form, narrow-mindedness, that is creates more sin than good. So I am only talking from the subject matter of the science of the soul. This is what I have got before me. The master at whose feet I had the good fortune to sit in India, he gave me that thing to just create a common ground for all to sit together. I think this is the first of its kind, and with all brothers are coming up, those who are really seeking after the truth. So all saints and rishis who came in the past, I have respect for all of them. Those who are at present, my respect also goes to them. Those who may come in the future, for them I also have the same love. So I have come as a humble admirer of all those saints who came in the past, whether in one country or the other, and I respect their teachings. So far as they are concerned with the esoteric side or the subjective side of the thing. As you are the outer side, the objective side, they have got their own forms, their own ways of living and rituals and other things. I have also respect for them, but that I do not take as the be-all and end-all. Be-all and end-all is knowledge of the self and knowledge of the over-self, you see. This is one before us. For that purpose, this platform on which I am speaking today, that is a gathering of the spiritual people, all seekers after truth. So this is the standpoint. I am explaining only to put before you. Some people do ask what sect you profess. And as physically I remain in the form where I am born, you are fully, charged to remain where you are, remain there. Changing of the outer form do not help and won't help. You have to change inner self. You have to know yourself and the over self. With these few words, as I have said just now, that I have regard for all saints who came in the past. All holy scriptures are mine. And when I read through them, you see, I find the same parallel thought running through them. That the knowledge of the self and the knowledge of the over self. I'll just quote you, give you some reference from different saints, not in one day. Try to, in a series of lectures or talks, I will be able to give quoting from one or the other holy scriptures to show you that the inner science of the soul is the same one for all. It has not changed, nature laws do not change and have not changed. So far, we do not know anything for tomorrow, but so far they have not changed. They are always easier and one for us all, you see. I'll just quote one hymn from Kabir first, that another from another saint, just from day to day, when we are holding talks here, I will try to give you quotations and references from all, so far as I know, because man cannot claim that he knows everything, but so far as I have gone through these different holy scriptures, and I have found the truth of it that I will lay before you. Now I will Kabir has been a father, I would say, of spirituality in the East. His sayings I'll just quote to you. He says, these saints always address the souls, you see, and soul bodies, not to any particular sect or socialism. That's the first thing. These saints always give their instruction to all mankind as a whole. They do not come for any special sect. Of course they are born somewhere, but they rise up so much that all, for them, the all humanity becomes one. They have got one social body of all humanity. So they always address the souls. Here he says, awake, O soul. You'll find here the word awake is used. It means we are sleeping somewhere. A man asleep does not know where he is, who is he. He sees so many things in dreams while asleep, but he does not know the very self who is seeing at the time. When he wakes up, he sees, oh, he had a very good sleep. He's got some experience which he cannot know at the time he's sleeping. So where we are sleeping, that's the point. Our souls, you see, under the control of mind. Mind is under the control of the outgoing faculties. We are identifying ourselves with the body so much so that we are asleep from within. We do not know who we are. So this word has been used almost by all the rishis who came in the past. Vedas say, awake, arise and stop not until the goal is reached. Where we are sleeping? We are in a delusion, I would say. We are not the bodies, we are the indweller of the bodies, but we see, we look, we behave just as it were we are the body themselves. So we are asleep. Awakened people, those who analyze themselves from the body, when they address the soul, look, your soul, why not awake? Why are you asleep? Wake up. The time has come now, because this awakening can only come in the body of a man. There is so much creation of God, but of all, the man is the highest rung of the all creation. Man has got, you see, discriminative power. He can discriminate between the right and the wrong. So man is endowed with that power. And while as a man you can do that much, you can differentiate yourself in theory first and then practically, that much you cannot do in any other form of creation. So masters, when they come, they always address, say, all right, awake, why are you sleeping even now? The day has come in which you can wake up. So it is in mankind that you can wake up. You can know yourself. You can know ourselves and no other creation.
And we will close the satsang with Guru Arjan's bhajan, Nama Tu Marta, Here Today Vase, on page 169. Let your Nam reside in my heart, and let me have the company of the saints. From the Lord I ask for one donation, that all my desires may be fulfilled, so that I may repeat your Nam. Let your feet reside in my heart. Let me have the company of the saints, so that the fire of passions may not spread in my mind, and day and night I may sing your praise. When I have good health, and also when I don't, let me serve God, and in my middle age, let me meditate upon him. Nanak says, those who are dyed in the color of God do not take birth and die again. Let your Nam reside in my heart, and let me have the company of the saints.
Nama Tu Marta, Here Today Vase, Santanaka Sangapavo. Nama Tu Marta, Here Today Vase, Santanaka Sangapavo. Mangarama Tekadana, Rama Tekadana. Mangarama Tekadana, Rama Tekadana. Sagala manarata purana hove, simaro tumara nama. Nama Tu Marta, Here Today Vase, Santanaka Sangapavo. Nama Tu Marta, Here Today Vase, Santanaka Sangapavo. Charana Tu Mare, Here Today Vase, Santanaka Sangapavo. Soga aganama manana beape atapara gunagabo. Nama Tu Marta, Here Today Vase, Santanaka Sangapavo. Nama Tu Marta, Here Today Vase, Santanaka Sangapavo. Savasta bevasta ariki seva Marianta prabha japana. Saga Parameshara Bohar Janama Nachapana Nanakaranga Laga Parameshara Bohar Janama Nachapana Namatu Mara Irudeva Se Santanaka Sangupavo Namatu Mara Irudeva Se Santanaka Sangupavo.
Let your feet reside in my heart. Let me have the company of the saints, so that the fire of passions may not spread in my mind, and day and night I may sing your praise. Let your Nam reside in my heart, and let me have the company of the saints. May God bless us all.